So we are in 1 Samuel, and last week we finished 21. So tonight we'll get on to 22. To recap where we are, Saul has gone full paranoid and tried to kill David. And at the end of 21, David fled to Gath, and you can see on the map behind me, Gath is in the upper left-hand corner. Gath is a Philistine city, and when David got there, the Philistines said, "Gee, isn't this David who has, among other things, killed a couple hundred of us just to get a bride price?" So David, at that point, realized that he was not going to be welcome in Gath, feigned insanity, foaming at the mouth and so forth. So the king of Gath said, "Do I lack madmen that you have brought this fellow to behave as a madman in my presence? Shall this fellow come into my house?" And so David leaves. So what we're going to do tonight is David is going to be fleeing from Saul for the next several chapters. And he is going to be rescued out of Saul's hand by several means, some of which are supernatural. So the first place he goes is the cave of Adullam, and that is just west of the central ridge route, south of Bethlehem, north of Hebron, and then east out on the flat. The commentary I read said cave could also be translated as stronghold, and it will be stronghold back and forth as we read this. So 22, David departed from there and escaped to the cave of Adullam, and then his brothers and all his father's house heard it. They went down there to him, and everyone who was in distress, and everyone who was in debt, and everyone who was bitter in soul gathered to him, and he became captain over them, and there were with him about 400 men. So what's going to happen is he is going to be running a protection racket in the south of Judah and over towards the Philistines, where he's going to be getting people out of trouble and so forth, and expecting to be supported for that. The other thing, of course, is he gathers everyone who was in debt and everyone who was bitter in soul, which is to say he gathered malcontents. Verse 3, then David went from there to Mizpah of Moab, and he said to the king of Moab, "Please let my father and my mother stay with you till I know what God will do with me." One of the things that he is obviously doing is getting his family out of Saul's reach, because, of course, Saul is not going to be above doing some very irrational things, and he doesn't want his family to be in the line of fire, so to speak. And then verse 4, he left them with the king of Moab, and they stayed with him all the time that David was in the stronghold. Remember, I said the cave of Adullam could be also translated as stronghold of Adullam. And here it is, the same place. Then the prophet Gad said to David, "Do not remain in the stronghold. Depart and go to the land of Judah." So David departed and went into the forest of Hereth. Now, the forest of Hereth is south of Adullam and north of Keilah. So now we go back to Saul. Now, Saul heard that David was discovered and the men who were with him. Saul was sitting in Gibeah under the tamarisk on the height with his spear in his hand, and all his servants were standing around him. Gibeah is Saul's hometown. It's on the central ridge route that runs down the spine of Israel. It's in the saddle of Benjamin, since Saul is a Benjaminite. The next place he's going to go is Nob, which is slightly south and off to the east of the north-south ridge route. So Saul is sitting there playing with his spear. And Saul said to his servants who stood around him, "Hear now, people of Benjamin, will the son of Jesse give every one of you fields and vineyards? Will he make you all commanders of thousands and commanders of hundreds, that all of you have conspired against me? No one discloses with me when my son makes a covenant with the son of Jesse. None of you is sorry for me or discloses to me that my son has stirred up my servant against me to lie in wait as at this day. Then answered Doeg. Remember, Doeg was the guy that was at Nob when David showed up there and asked for some bread and picked up the showbread and the sword of Goliath. And Doeg, by the way, is a shepherd, and he is in charge of Saul's flocks. Then answered Doeg the Edomite, who stood by the servant of Saul, I saw the son of Jesse coming to Nob, to Ahimelech, the son of Ahitub, and he inquired of the Lord for him and gave him provisions and gave him the sword of Goliath the Philistine. Now, consider this little soliloquy that Saul makes. That is just paranoia on steroids. He said, nobody cares about me at all. You all like the son of Jesse. Is he going to make you commanders of anything? Is he going to be able to do anything to you? Why have you all turned against me? I'm reminded of a movie, and probably you all are too young to have seen it. It's a World War II movie. It's called The Caine Mutiny. The story there is there's a Navy ship, and it gets into Captain Quig. Captain Quig has come from the Atlantic where he had seen heavy combat. Captain Quig is paranoid, what we would call PTSD today, erratic, etc. And the crew winds up mutinying. They decide that this guy is not fit to command. But there's a scene in this movie. Now, Quig goes around, he's got some ball bearings in his hand. And he's always working the ball bearings around in his hand. And he's got some strawberries. And he goes into the mess hall and opens the refrigerator to get his strawberries. And somebody has eaten his strawberries. The scene there as he searches the ship and tries to shake everybody down to find out what happened to his strawberries. All I can think of when I read this passage where Saul is full-blown paranoid is Captain Quig looking for his strawberries and fondling a set of ball bearings in his hand and just looking more than slightly mad. I imagine you can probably find that scene on YouTube because it's very famous, Captain Quig and the Strawberries. 1954 movie, Humphrey Bogart was the captain, and it's a very good movie. So verse 11, then the king sent to summon Ahimelech the priest, the son of Ahitub, and all his father's house, the priests who were at Nob, and all of them came to the king. And Saul said, hear now, son of Ahitub. And he answered, here I am, my lord. And Saul said to him, why have you conspired against me, you and the son of Jesse, in that you gave him bread and a sword and have inquired of God for him, so that he has risen against me to lie in wait as at this day? So you can see the scenario that Saul is building in his mind. Everybody's against him. David is out there laying in wait, and at some point David is going to come back and is going to kill him and take over the kingdom, and he's just crazy at this point. 14. Then Ahimelech answered the king, and who among all your servants is so faithful as David? Who is the king's son-in-law, the captain over your bodyguard, and honored in your house? Is today the first time that I have inquired of God for him? No. Let not the king impute anything to his servant or to all the house of my father, for your servant has known nothing of all this, much or little. So what Ahitub is saying is, as far as I knew, David was part of your court. He said he was sent there on official business. He's come on official business before. I didn't see anything unusual here that would alert me to the fact that you are at odds with David. The commander of your bodyguard shows up, said, I was in a hurry. I need a sword quick. I gave him Goliath's sword. I gave him some food and sent him on his way. I thought he was on your business. So Ahimelech is gobsmacked that he's getting this kind of treatment from the king. Verse 16. And the king said, you shall surely die, Ahimelech, you and all your father's house. I mean, as I say, this is just completely insane paranoia and irrationality. He's got himself convinced that David is turning everybody against him, and nothing that anybody says is going to change his mind. 17, and the king said to the guard who stood about him, turn and kill the priests of the Lord, because their hand also is with David. And they knew that he had fled and did not disclose it to me. But the servants of the king would not put their hand to strike the priests of the Lord. So everybody there recognizes that Saul's gone off the rails. So none of his court raises a hand. Verse 18, then the king said to Doeg, you turn and strike the priests. And Doeg the Edomite, and you notice he's always Doeg the Edomite, which is a descendant of Esau. So he is not an Israelite. He is a herdsman for Saul. And Doeg the Edomite turned and struck down the priests, and he killed on that day 85 persons who wore the linen ephod. And Nob, the city of the priests, he put to the sword, both man and woman, child and infant, ox, donkey, and sheep. He put them to the sword. Now, what I don't know is who was with him, because I doubt very seriously that Doeg did it all by himself. He has killed 85 people and has wiped out the priestly city of Nob. That is not a one-man affair. So I don't know who is with him, whether he gathered all the herdsmen or what, but the king's immediate court would not do it. But somewhere Doeg found people who would. Notice the complete irrationality of all of this. Verse 20. But one of the sons of Ahimelech, the son of Ahitub, named Abiathar, escaped and fled after David. And Abiathar told David that Saul had killed the priests of the Lord. And David said to Abiathar, I knew on that day when Doeg the Edomite was there that he would surely tell Saul, I have occasioned the death of all the persons of your father's house. Stay with me, do not be afraid, for he who seeks my life seeks your life. With me you shall be in safekeeping. And understand that the only thing David could have done would have been to strike down Doeg, but he had no reason to. Yeah, he sort of knew that Doeg was going to go back and report to Saul what happened, but what he couldn't have foreseen is just how rabidly paranoid Saul was. He probably figured that the whole thing would stop when Ahimelech went down and said, yeah, I didn't see anything wrong. David was your servant. He showed up, asked for a reading from God, asked for some food, and I gave him all that and sent him on the way. He had done it before. What's the big deal? So now we're down to chapter 23. Now they told David, behold, the Philistines are fighting against Keilah and robbing the threshing floors. Therefore David inquired of the Lord, shall I go and attack these Philistines? And the Lord said to David, go and attack the Philistines and save Keilah. But David's men said to him, behold, we are afraid here in Judah. How much more then if we go to Keilah against the armies of the Philistines? To get you oriented where Keilah is, it is just south of Adullam, where David has been. So not a far trip. And again, what his people are saying is, whoa, not so fast. We've got Saul chasing us. So the last thing we want to do is make another set of enemies of the Philistines. Because what's going to happen, we're going to have Saul coming down from above, and we're going to have the Philistines coming from the west, and we're going to have no place to run. That's the argument that they're making. Verse 4, then David inquired of the Lord again, and the Lord answered him, arise, go down to Keilah, for I will give the Philistines into your hand. And David and his men went to Keilah and fought to get with the Philistines and brought away their livestock and struck them with a great blow. So David saved the inhabitants of Keilah. And this very well could be the origin of the phrase, no good deed goes unpunished. So when Abiathar, the son of Ahimelech, had fled to David to Keilah, he had come down with an ephod in his hand. Now it was told Saul that David had come to Keilah. And Saul said, God has given him into my hand, for he has shut himself in by entering a town that has gates and bars. And Saul summoned all the people of war to go down to Keilah to besiege David and his men. David knew that Saul was plotting harm against him, and he said to Abiathar the priest, bring the ephod here. Then David said, O Lord, the God of Israel, your servant has surely heard that Saul seeks to come to Keilah to destroy the city on my account. Will the men of Keilah surrender me into his hand? Will Saul come down as your servant has heard? O Lord, the God of Israel, please tell your servant. And the Lord said, he will come down. Then David said, will the men of Keilah surrender me and my men into the hand of Saul? And the Lord said, they will surrender you. So here he has just gotten done rescuing that town, and Saul knows where he is now. Saul figures he got him corralled because he's in a city. And so what he'll do is come down with an army and lay siege to the city. And so the question in David's mind is, if he comes and lays siege to the city, are the people there going to throw me out the front gate to get the siege lifted? And God says, yeah, they will. So, as I say, this is sort of the origin of no good deed goes unpunished, because they are not willing to protect him from Saul at the expense of a siege. The comment was that the last time Saul found a city that he thought was aiding David, he destroyed the whole city. So there's no question that they are afraid, because Saul has got a bigger force than David has. The other thing is the ephod. What I think that is Urim and Thummim, the lots that are cast. So what the priest did is bring down a set of lots from the priestly gear, because the ephod is on the chest, and inside of that pocket are the Urim and Thummim, which you cast lots to inquire of the Lord. So it's a yes, no kind of a thing. Ask a question. Cast lots. Is the answer yes or is the answer no? And notice, by the way, that he asks his questions in such a way that yes, no answers gets the information he wants. So, for example, he doesn't say, God, tell me where I should go, because that's not amenable to a yes, no answer. He could say, God, should I flee to Moab? Yes or no? 13. Then David and his men, who were about 600, arose and departed from Keilah, and they went wherever they could go. When Saul was told David had escaped from Keilah, he gave up the expedition. And David remained in the strongholds in the wilderness, in the hill country of the wilderness of Ziph. And Saul sought him every day, but God did not give him into his hand. Ziph is south and east of Hebron. Verse 15. David saw that Saul had come out to seek his life, and David was in the wilderness of Ziph at Horesh. Horesh is a small town in the area between Hebron and Ziph. And Jonathan, Saul's son, rose and went to David at Horesh. So Jonathan is able to find him. Saul is not able to find him. And naturally, if Saul finds out about this, it's going to do nothing but increase his paranoia, which is already at red levels. 16. And Jonathan, Saul's son, rose and went to David at Horesh and strengthened his hand in God. And he said to him, do not fear, for the hand of Saul, my father, shall not find you. You shall be king over Israel, and I shall be next to you. Saul, my father, also knows this. And the two of them made a covenant before the Lord. And David remained at Horesh, and Jonathan went home. So Saul knows that Jonathan sides with David. You remember when we had the business with the new moon, and David didn't show up for 3 days, didn't show up at all, as a matter of fact. Saul then cursed out his son, calling him the son of a perverse woman in front of everybody. So Saul knows how that particular relationship is. But again, it's his own son, as opposed to David, who's not. Verse 19. Then the Ziphites went up to Saul at Gibeah, saying, is not David hiding among us in the stronghold at Horesh, in the hill of Hakilah, which is south of Jeshimon? Verse 20. Now come down, O king, according to all your heart's desire, to come down, and our part shall be to surrender him into the king's hand. I don't have any idea what their motivation is, except possibly sucking up to the king. He's the legitimate government. David is a bandit and a rebel. So they're being good citizens and turning David over. 21, Saul said, "May you be blessed by the Lord, for you have had compassion on me. Go, make yet more sure. Know and see the place where his foot is, and who has seen him there, for it is told me that he is very cunning." So Saul is obviously, somebody's on my side finally, because nobody else seems to be. And obviously David is indeed very cunning, because remember, David has been a military commander for quite a while. So he is not only skilled in warfare, he's also skilled in moving through the country with troops and all that kind of stuff. He knows what he's doing. Comment was that Saul is calling on the name of the Lord to bless these folks, and David is calling on the Lord, and there isn't any question in Saul's mind who God is. But the problem that Saul has is when he disobeyed the Lord's command to destroy all the Amalekites, he lost his connection to God. Because before that, he'd had Samuel, who was a prophet and would tell him what to do and so forth. But after that, Samuel went home and wouldn't talk to him anymore. And that's one of the things that has driven Saul insane. He's lost his spiritual connection. And we'll see later on, as we get toward the end of this book, that he becomes so desperate that he goes and consults a medium, the witch at Endor, because he's getting no supernatural guidance, which the kings of Israel depend on, having prophets and so forth, and being able to get word from the Lord as to whether or not they should go do something. He's lost that. It's gone. Verse 23. "See therefore and take note of all the lurking places where he hides, and come back to me with sure information. Then I will go with you. And if he is in the land, I will search him out among all the thousands of Judah." And they arose and went to Ziph ahead of Saul. So they are going to watch David and report on him and let Saul know all of the places where he hides. So Saul can then come down with a larger force and just eliminate all those places until he finds David. So we're at 24 and a half. "Now David and his men in the wilderness of Maon in Arabah, south of Jeshimon." The Arabah is the Dead Sea region. "And Saul and his men went to seek him, and David was told. So he went down to the rock and lived in the wilderness of Maon. And when Saul heard that, he pursued after David in the wilderness of Maon. Saul went on one side of the mountain, and David and his men on the other side of the mountain. And David was hurrying to get away from Saul, as Saul and his men were closing in on David and his men to capture them. A messenger came to Saul, saying, 'Hurry and come, for the Philistines have made a raid against the land.'" I am absolutely firmly convinced that that's God's hand. Saul is in hot pursuit, and it's rugged country down there. David would be on one side of the mountain, and Saul would be on the other side of the mountain. But Saul has superior forces, lots more men than David has. And David has to keep his men together. They have to move as a unit. I don't know whether they raise a cloud of dust or not, but you've got 600 guys moving around, and that's hard to conceal. At some point, Saul's going to catch him. So when he gets the word that the Philistines have made a raid on his western flank up north, he has to turn and go meet the Philistine threat, and that allows David to escape. And the scripture doesn't say it, but I firmly believe that the Philistine raid is the hand of God. As we read this, remember that the respectable people in the south have turned David in. Yet somebody is warning David. So it isn't unanimous. Similarly, I would be very surprised if the Philistines didn't have spies in the Israelite court. Don't know that. It's not scripture, but it's certainly standard human behavior when you have two unfriendly countries abutting each other. Each of them tries to keep track of what's going on with the other, just for self-defense purposes. We're at 28. So Saul returned from pursuing after David and went against the Philistines. Therefore, that place is called the Rock of Escape. And David went up from there and lived in the strongholds of En-Gedi. En-Gedi is by the Dead Sea. And if you've been down to the Dead Sea and you look to the west, it's full of caves and it's full of hiding places and so forth. So chapter 24. When Saul returned from following the Philistines, he was told David is in the wilderness of En-Gedi. Then Saul took 3,000 chosen men out of all Israel and went to seek David and his men in front of the wild goats rocks. And he came to the sheepfold by the way, where there was a cave, and Saul went in to relieve himself. Now, David and his men were sitting in the innermost parts of the cave. So you look at that terrain riddled with caves. In fact, somewhere along that escarpment is where the Dead Sea Scrolls were found. Wilderness, very rough, and so forth. Verse 4, and the men of David said to him, here is the day of which the Lord has said to you, behold, I will give your enemy into your hand, and ye shall do to him as it shall seem good to you. Then David arose and stealthily cut off the corner of Saul's robe. And afterwards David's heart struck him because he had cut off a corner of Saul's robe. He said to his men, the Lord forbid that I should do this thing to my Lord and the Lord's anointed to put out my hand against him, seeing as he is the Lord's anointed. So David persuaded his men with these words and did not permit them to attack Saul. And Saul rose up and left the cave and went on his way. This is the beginning of the skillful political stuff that David is going to do in order to become king over all Israel. Because remember, David is from Judah. And the politics in Israel is Judah and Ephraim both think they ought to be king. And we said last time, that's probably one of the reasons why Benjamin was chosen as the original king, because it's not Judah and it's not Ephraim. Well, David is going to have a problem getting everybody on the same sheet of music to recognize him as king. So one of the things that he does in this case is he does not assassinate Saul, because that would have turned Benjamin against him. And of course, the saddle of Benjamin is a key piece of ground. He's also going to do things like avenge Saul's death. He is going to adopt Mephibosheth, Jonathan's son, and he's going to treat Saul and his descendants well. And he's going to be very skillful politically, getting everybody on his side. And part of that is, I will not touch the Lord's anointed. And I'm not saying David is being insincere. I'm simply saying that either his instincts or his reasoning enable him to very skillfully navigate the politics of Israel so that he winds up being the king. And we'll see more of this as we go along. Very, very skillful at handling people and so forth. 8. Afterwards, David also arose and went out of the cave and called after Saul, my lord, the king. And when Saul looked behind him, David bowed with his face to the earth and paid homage. And David said to Saul, why do you listen to the words of men who say, behold, David seeks your harm? Behold, this day your eyes have seen how the Lord gave you into my hand in the cave. And some told me to kill you, but I spared you. I said, I will not put my hand against my Lord, for he is the Lord's anointed. See, my father, see the corner of your robe in my hand? For by the fact that I cut off the corner of your robe and did not kill you, you may know and see that there is no wrong or treason in my hands. I have not sinned against you, though you hunt my life to take it. May the Lord judge between me and you. May the Lord avenge me against you, but my hand shall not be against you. As the proverb of the ancient said, out of the wicked comes wickedness, but my hand shall not be against you. After whom is the king of Israel come out? After whom do you pursue? After a dead dog? After a flea? May the Lord therefore be judge and give sentence between me and you, and see to it and plead my case and deliver me from your hand. Now this idea, a dead dog or a flea, is I'm no threat to you. You got the entire army of Israel thrashing around down here after somebody who was insignificant. That's what he's saying. Not only insignificant, but not trying to assassinate you. So you don't need to worry about me. Verse 16. As soon as David had finished speaking these words to Saul, Saul said, "Is this your voice, my son David?" And Saul lifted up his voice and wept. He said to David, "You are more righteous than I, for you have repaid me good, whereas I have repaid you evil. And you have declared this day how you have dealt well with me, in that you did not kill me when the Lord put me in your hands. For if a man finds his enemy, will he let him go away safe? So may the Lord reward you with good for what you have done to me this day. And now behold, I know that you shall surely be king, and that the kingdom of Israel shall be established in your hand. Swear to me therefore by the Lord that you will not cut off my offspring after me, and you will not destroy my name out of my father's house." And David swore this to Saul. Then Saul went home, and David and his men went up to the stronghold. So Saul has a temporary moment of sanity. Notice I stress temporary. He recognizes that David has done right. Now, what I don't know, given this scenario that has just played out, whether Saul is being sincere or cunning. Because after that speech of David's and so forth, for him to turn around and kill David at that point is going to make him look like a real idiot. So he may be being cunning, or he may have what I would call a moment of sanity. But notice, David does not go back with him. David stays down south. And as I say, he starts running a protection racket down there. And he doesn't have any more to do with Saul because he doesn't trust Saul. I don't know that he suspects that Saul is probably not stable, which he's not, and that this moment of sanity on Saul's part may not last. So he is not going to put himself in a position where if Saul has a bad day, we do this all over again. So he's going to stay down in the wilderness, down in southern Judea, and he will range back and forth between Judea and Philistia. He will conduct raids against the Philistines. For example, we'll have a vignette where Nabal is a rich man, and by the way, I love his name. His name means fool. He behaves like a fool. And so at the sheep shearing, David sends some of his guys up and says, "I've watched over you. You've not lost any sheep. My men have protected you. Now I want a little something at the sheep shearing." And Nabal says, "Ha." And at that point, David is going to come up and slaughter him and all of his household, and Abigail is the only thing that saves him. So, as I say, David is going to be a freelance guy down there. His hand, for the most part, is going to be on Israel's side. At one point, he's going to volunteer to join the Philistines as they go against Israel. And that gets turned down by the Philistines because they don't trust him. And the commentary I read years ago said, if he had gone up and fought against Israel, it's very doubtful he would have been able to become king because nobody would trust him. So the fact that the Philistines turned him down, again, is the hand of the Lord protecting David from doing something dumb. Anyway, at this point, he sets himself up as sort of an independent warlord and going to rumble around down there until Saul dies. And David and Abigail is the next vignette in chapter 25, so we'll pick that up next time.